The examination room was typical of those Anya had used at other facilities. Just a small square room with a table in the center and decent lighting overhead. A metal case rested on the tabletop, two pairs of white cotton gloves lying beside it. A surveillance camera hung from the ceiling in one corner. Their host led them over to the table and then went around to the opposite side. He took his own pair of white gloves out of his pocket and pulled them on, indicating with a nod that they should do the same. Then he turned the case toward him and punched the combination into the keypad lock set in the top.
A few reminders. Gloves must be worn at all times, and photography of any kind, with or without flash, is strictly prohibited. Written transcripts of the entire volume are available, complete with reproductions of the artwork, and I have one of these made available to you should you need it.
Anya's attention was riveted on the gold and jewel-encrusted tome he lifted out of the specimen case and set on the table in front of them. The Gospel of Gold. It was an oversized book, long and wide like an accountant's ledger, and several inches thick. The cover was filigree gold, inset with uncut precious gems, topazes, tourmalines, and sapphires from the looks of them. It drew her forward like a moth to a flame.
Amazing, isn't it?
It certainly was. Up close, Anya could see five circular enamels set in the cover, one on each corner and a larger one in the center. All five were surrounded by wreathed inscriptions linked to one another in yellowed gold. The image in the center was that of the risen Christ, while those in the corners represented various saints praying or studying. It was a stunning piece of workmanship, made all the more so by the knowledge that the work had been done by hand in the 16th century.
My office is just down the hall, so if you need anything, dial 475.
Petrescu pointed to an old-fashioned push-button phone hanging on the wall in the corner. He didn't mention the state-of-the-art security camera that hung from the ceiling above it. It was positioned so that most of the room would be visible, but Anya doubted the feed would be monitored 24/7. Then again, this was Russia. Satisfied that all was in order, their host left them to it. Anya and Gianni spent the next several hours going through the Gospel one page at a time, carefully examining each one before moving on to the next. As they had decided the night before, Anya concentrated on the text of each page, while Gianni focused on the artwork that decorated the borders and surrounded the drop cap that started each section of text. If Gianni's research was correct, somewhere in the Gospel's gilded pages were instructions to find the map that would lead them to the library. The workmanship was beautiful. The scribe had used bold, clean strokes, and the words and images seemed to jump right off the page at her. It was hard to believe this was a book that had been produced more than 400 years ago. Beauty aside, however, after hours of careful observation, they could find nothing that pointed to the location or even the existence of the map that Fioravanti had mentioned in his journal. They'd been through the complete text, and having arrived at the blank page at the end, Anya was ready to admit that they might need to rethink their approach.
I'm used to setbacks, Gianni. Why don't we take a break and come at it again later with fresh eyes?
Damn it! We can't give up now. It's here somewhere. I know it is!
No one is giving up. I'm just suggesting we take a short break, that's all.
Anya glanced over Gianni's shoulder at the camera on the other side of the room, hoping he'd recognize the unspoken warning in her eyes. She didn't want to offer their hosts any excuse for removing them from the room. With her gaze still on her companion, Anya reached out to close the book, and in the process her fingers brushed across the surface of the end page. Something tugged at the cotton glove covering the tip of one finger. 1/100th of a degree less pressure, and she never would have felt it. She looked down at the page in front of her, but didn't see anything that was immediately obvious. And a second pass with her gloved finger across its surface didn't turn up whatever it was that had snagged it in the first place either.
But something is there. I'm certain of it. Maybe the glove is the problem.
Anya didn't want to be caught on camera violating the rules they'd agreed to abide by. Gianni was standing on the far side of the table from her, his body positioned almost directly in front of the camera. She slid the book closer to his end of the table, then moved around to his side and gave him what she hoped would appear to any observer like a friendly one-armed hug, supporting a stressed-out colleague.
Block the camera with your body. I found something.
Gianni's eyes widened, but he did as she asked. With her hands in front of her and both of their bodies between the book and the camera, Anya pulled her glove off and ran the tips of her fingers across the empty page. Now she could feel it, a series of raised bumps, as if someone had pushed down on the other side of the page with a pointed object.
Three numbers. 268. That's all.
Concerned that the Gospel of Gold had been out of closed-circuit view for too long, Anya pulled her glove back on and stepped away from the table, revealing to the camera that the book was in the same place it had been a moment before. Gianni was practically shaking with his need to know what she had found, so she quickly filled him in.
Three numbers. That's it?
That's it.
Damn it.
What's the problem now?
It's another bloody code, isn't it?
Gianni might not like codes, but Anya did. Codes, puzzle boxes, riddles, she loved them all.
Fioravanti used a substitution code, so it makes sense that his colleague would do the same. And if that's the case, then each number stands for something specific. But what?
She looked down at the numbers again.
268. All the numbers are not only even, but they're also divisible by two. And when you add the first two together, you get the third. But what do the numbers represent?
She glanced at Gianni to see him flipping through the pages at the beginning of the Gospel, clearly looking for something specific.
What is it?
Not sure yet.
He found the page he was looking for and began running his finger down the text.
Hang on. It's nothing, never mind.
I want to hear it.
I thought the numbers might stand for specific words in the text. The first number would represent the word, the second the line on which it is found, and the third the page number. So 268 would be the second word on the sixth line of the eighth page of the text.
That's good, Gianni. Really good.
Well, the word the isn't going to get us really far.
Gianni's right. One word isn't going to get us very far. But what if the means to find the next word is wrapped up in the instructions for the first? In the first clue, the first two numbers 2 and 6 combine to equal the third, 8. What if I stick with that pattern? Combine the second and third numbers to get the fourth, the third and fourth to get the fifth, and so on.
Anya pulled the book closer and tried it out. The first five combinations gave her the words the, Judah, Yahweh, dawn, and worship. Not exactly the kind of revelation she was looking for. And she couldn't continue with the process because the next combination would result in a line number that was greater than the lines on any given page.
What did I tell you? Useless!
I'm not ready to give up yet. What if I divide each number in the combination by the number of the clue I'm currently trying to solve? The number set of 268 will still stay the same since it's the first clue and therefore would be divided by 1. But 6814 would become 347 when it was divided by 2, and 81422 would become 358 if I round up to the next nearest divisible number.
Using this system, the first three combinations gave them three words. The key to.
Keep going.
Anya kept at it until she ran out of numbers that would fit into the makeshift equation, given the limitations of the lines on the page and the number of pages in the text. When she was done, she arranged the words she jotted down into lines that seemed to make sense.
Key to Grozny's treasure lies in the hand of the lady who stands in the center of the rising flames.
Goosebumps rose along Anya's arms as she stared at the words in front of her.
The lady who stands in the center of the rising flames.
Given her own personal history with a particular woman who had done just that, Anya was momentarily at a loss. Gianni must have noticed something was wrong. He reached out and put a hand on her lower arm.
Are you all right?
It's okay. I'm fine. Just a coincidence. Coincidence or a sign that I'm on the right path?
Grozny. That's Russian for fearsome, right?
Fearsome or terrible, usually, yeah.
So it's clearly referencing Ivan the Terrible.
That's how I would read it.
What about the next part, then? Who is the lady? And what are the flames she is standing in? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
But it did to Anya, thanks to all the research she had done about the Kremlin and its surroundings. Never mind a few choice memories from having been raised in a Catholic orphanage. She pointed to the word lady at the end of the second line.
The lady is the Most Holy Lady Theotokos, otherwise known as the Virgin Mary. To Russian Orthodox believers, as with Catholics, she is venerated, a very important figure.
Right. The main chapel of St. Basil's Cathedral right here in Red Square is dedicated to her.
And it's also the center referred to in the third line.
How do you know that?
Because the cathedral stands in the geometric center of the Garden Ring, the circular avenue that runs around the heart of Moscow, on the very spot where the first protective rampart and wall were built by Fyodor I back in 1591.
And the flames?
Legend has it that the cathedral was designed to resemble a bonfire burning into the Russian night.
So the map is hidden in the statue of the Virgin Mary,
which stands in the middle of St. Basil's Cathedral a few hundred yards away from here.
In the wake of their discovery, Anya called down to Dr. Petrescu's office and let him know they had finished with the Gospel of Gold. It seemed to take forever for him to arrive in the examination room, and even longer for him to pack the Gospel back into its protective case. Anya kept up a running commentary on the impressiveness of the Gospel's illuminations and how they compared to other books of the same time period. When Petrescu finally had the Gospel secured in its carrying case, he led them back to the security desk, where she thanked him, and they said their goodbyes. Once outside, Anya had to restrain Gianni from rushing across the square to St. Basil's. It was mid-afternoon, and the square was filled with hundreds of people, most of them tourists. She felt the same urge to see if the map remained where it had been secreted all those years ago, but a couple of foreigners rushing across Red Square as if their lives were in danger would certainly capture the attention of the authorities, particularly in this age of suicide bombers and terrorist attacks. The last thing they needed was to be dragged into another windowless room for a round of aggressive questioning.
Slow down. We need to think about this.
What's to think about? We find the statue, grab the map, and get out of there.
In front of all these people? I don't think so.
Well, what do you suggest, then?
There's no sense blindly rushing into this. The map has been there for several hundred years. Another hour or two won't make a difference. Let's go inside, take a look around, and work out a plan.
Reluctantly, Gianni conceded the point, and they began to thread their way through the crowd, headed for the colorful domes of St. Basil's. Impulsively, Anya slipped her arm through Gianni's and received a wide smile in return. The day was warm and clear, and Anya was suddenly feeling very good about the work they'd accomplished so far. St. Basil's Cathedral's real name, she knew, was the Cathedral of the Protection of Most Holy Theotokos on the Moat, which made her thankful for its more common nickname. Its proper name came from the alleged appearance of the apparition of the Virgin above the city of Constantinople when it was being threatened by a large Slavic fleet. Ivan had ordered the cathedral built in 1555 to commemorate the capture of Kazan and Astrakhan, which marked the final battle of the Russo-Kazan Wars. The original building had consisted of 8 smaller side churches surrounding a 9th central one. A 10th was added 30 years later over the grave of a local saint, and that's where its popular name had come from. The church's design was unlike any other building in Russia, and the many colored hues and pigments that decorated its exterior caused it to stand out in Red Square. There was a line waiting to go in, and the two of them joined it, doing their best to look like any other pair of tourists. As they moved inside, Anya was surprised by how narrow it was. Each chapel was smaller than she expected, and the oddly turning corridors that connected them made it hard to see from one into the next. They pushed through the earlier chapels until they reached the main one in the center. The statue of the Virgin Mother stood on a raised platform set by itself inside a niche in the wall at the back of the room. Around it were more of the iconographic paintings, like those that decorated the rest of the cathedral's interior. The statue appeared to have been carved from a single piece of white marble, and the artist had depicted her in her usual cloak and veil, with one arm above her head and her face raised lovingly toward heaven. The statue was surrounded by a marble railing that reached mid-thigh, allowing tourists to see the Holy Mother clearly, but preventing them from touching her. Anya stood at the edge of the rail, trying to get a better look at the statue's hands, but it was too far away to see the kind of detail she was looking for. She glanced around and then approached a middle-aged tourist who was standing admiring the statue as well. A digital camera with a long telephoto lens hung around his neck.
Excuse me, sir?
Oui?
I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm trying to get a closer look at the features of the Holy Mother's face. Would you mind if I used your camera?
Of course. My pleasure.
They moved back over to the railing, where he handed her the camera and showed her how to focus it. She didn't need the instruction, but suffered through it quietly. When he was finished, she brought the camera to her eye and focused in on the statue's left hand, the one hanging by Mary's side. Even with the aid of the telephoto lens, Anya couldn't see anything out of the ordinary. The hand and the arm it was attached to both seemed to be made from the same piece of marble as the rest of the statue. The same held true for the other hand, the one raised toward the ceiling.
If it were easy to find, someone would have discovered it years ago.
She handed the camera back to the Frenchman.
Thank you, monsieur.
You're welcome.
Anya let Gianni know what she'd discovered.
So now what?
I'm not sure.
Moments later, the two of them found themselves alone in the small chapel. Despite all the time she'd spent cautioning her companion against rushing in and calling attention to themselves, Anya was gripped by a sudden sense of urgency. Before she knew it, she found herself climbing over the railing surrounding the statue.
Watch the door.
Gianni was staring in astonishment at what she was doing, but her words had the desired effect, breaking him out of his surprise and sending him hustling across the room.
This is a bad idea.
She clambered up on the pedestal. Her body blocked some of the light, sending shadows into the niche in which the statue stood, and so she pulled out her BlackBerry and used the flashlight app. It was immediately clear that the statue had been carved from one large block of stone. The right hand flowed onto the lower arm, and no matter what she did to it, pushed, pulled, tugged, twisted, she couldn't get it to move. Very conscious of the seconds ticking away, Anya turned her attention to the left hand, the one that was raised over the statue's head. It was still too high above the floor for her.
Damn. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Anya climbed onto the base of the platform, using the statue to steady herself. If anyone came in now, they were in deep trouble. She reached up and grabbed hold of the statue's right hand. To her surprise, the hand moved slightly.
Got something.
Better hurry up. There's a group of tourists getting closer.
Anya pushed and pulled at the hand, her heart pounding. It refused to move.
Stupid son of a...
They're getting closer.
It was time for something drastic. Holding her right arm out away from the statue, Anya reached into the otherwear. She whacked the statue's hand once sharply with the flat of the blade. By the time Gianni figured out where the sound was coming from and looked in her direction, the sword was gone. This time, when she grabbed the statue's hand, it came free so suddenly that she nearly dropped it on the floor. She immediately saw that it wasn't a solid piece of marble at all, but a hollowed-out shell. Something was stuffed inside it.
Anya!
Anya leaped from the base of the statue to the top of the railing and had just stepped down onto the floor of the chapel when tourists came into the room. One of them glanced sharply in her direction, and for a moment she thought the young man might have seen her up on the railing, but then he shook his head and looked away. No doubt he'd convinced himself it was absurd to even think someone had been where they were not supposed to be. Anya turned her back on the group and shoved two fingers into the opening in the base of the hand, trying to fish out whatever was inside there.
Come on, come on.
Finally, she managed to snag it and slowly pull it out. They had found the map. Colonel Viktor Goshenko stared out the window of his office at Red Square and considered how little things had changed in his country since the rise of Gorbachev and his ridiculous notions of glasnost and perestroika. The names were different. Prime Minister rather than Secretary General. The Federal Security Service instead of the Soviet Committee of State Security, otherwise known as the KGB. But not much else. The rich were still rich, the poor were still poor, and those without power craved it, while those who had it used it mercilessly toward their own ends. Goshenko was very happy to be one of the latter. Goshenko stepped over to the intercom and pressed the button with his thick finger.
Yes, Pavel.
There is a Semyon Pyotr on line one for you, Colonel.
For a moment, the name meant nothing to him. He stood there frowning, his finger on the intercom. He was about to tell Pavel to get rid of whoever it was when he finally made the connection.
Simon Peter, the first of the apostles. Of course. The fool's trying to use code to disguise his real identity. Except he's using his own first name in the process. What do you have for me?
A man and a woman were granted access to the archives today. They spent the majority of their time examining the Gospel of Gold, though for what, I do not know. They kept their voices low and were guarded in what they said. But at one point, the man grew excited and made reference to the library.
Did you recognize them?
Not the man, no. The woman, though, was familiar. She is the host of an American television show about ancient artifacts and legends. Her name is Anya Creed.
Photos?
Yes, though they are not the best quality, as they were taken with a cell phone. Still, they should serve their purpose.
Email them to this account immediately.
Goshenko rattled off the address of a throwaway account he'd created, one of many, for just such a purpose. There was a moment of silence on the other end of the line, and then the caller came back on.
Done. I have also included the name and address of their hotel.
You followed them?
No, of course not. They requested that translations of the gospel be sent over to them at their hotel.
That's good. After such excellent work, it would have been a shame to kill you.
Fear was always a good motivator, and Goshenko never missed an opportunity to make use of it, to remind those beneath him of their respective positions. But even he had to admit the informant had made excellent use of an opportunity. There was only one library this particular informant could be referring to, and Goshenko felt his heart rate increase. He'd dreamed of the library only two nights ago, and had awoken filled with a sense that his long quest was coming to an end, that soon the library and the riches it contained would be within his grasp. And now this, it seemed almost too good to be true. He turned to stare out the window at the tourists in Red Square. He wasn't seeing the weather, however, but rather the ancient scrolls and texts of Ivan the Terrible's long-lost library laid out before him, proof that his decades-long search had not been in vain. With a sense of victory humming through his body, he considered his next move. He needed to know more about this Creed woman. He returned to his desk and scoured the databases for any mention of her. What he saw both encouraged and concerned him. She appeared to be quite gifted in locating historic artifacts and puzzling the truth out of legends, if the consumer media was to be believed. Her list of accomplishments, particularly in the past few years, seemed as long as his arm. Time and again she had succeeded where others had failed, locating ancient cities and lost civilizations. It was her very success rate that set Goshenko's thoughts whirring inside his head. His first inclination was to send a team to snatch her off the street. He had no doubt she'd break under questioning and tell him everything she knew about the library and its whereabouts, because in time, everyone broke. But perhaps there was a better way. He picked up his phone and dialed a number.
Send Sergeant Danislav to my office.
He hung up, then turned and stared out the window once more, not seeing anything beyond the glass, his thoughts on the Creed woman as he waited for his subordinate to arrive. It didn't take long. Goshenko was always on the lookout for men with a particular set of talents, and Sergeant Danislav had come to his attention several years before, after he'd been involved in a series of raids against terror cells in the highlands of Afghanistan. The raids had achieved their objectives, but had been sullied by rumors that the sergeant in charge, one Arkady Danislav, had gone above and beyond the rules of engagement. In other words, he'd done what needed to be done, and to hell with the morality of the situation. Goshenko had needed a man like that on his staff to personally handle sensitive situations Goshenko didn't want on the books. It hadn't taken much to convince the sergeant that his future might be brighter under Goshenko's patronage. The colonel had arranged an interdepartmental transfer for Denisilov, and the man had been a permanent member of his staff ever since. Denisilov slipped into the room. He could move quietly for a man his size. Unlike most of the agents of the Federal Security Service, he wasn't clean-shaven, but his goatee was neatly trimmed and his hair was cut short enough to satisfy even the most stringent military regulations. He wore civilian clothing and a pair of hiking boots, but there was no mistaking the past position he had held in the ramrod erect way he carried himself. He came to a stop exactly 10 inches in front of Goshenko's desk.
You wanted to see me, sir.
Thank you for coming, Sergeant. Two Americans visited the Cathedral of the Annunciation today as part of an unauthorized expedition to find the Library of Gold. I want you to determine what it was they looked at and what they might have found as a result of their research. View the security tapes, talk to the curator, whatever is necessary. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Good. The man you want to see over there is Semyon Petrescu. He shouldn't give you any trouble. Call me when you know something.
Yes, sir.
Denisilov resisted the urge to salute, a habit Goshenko knew he was trying hard to break, and headed out to follow his orders. Goshenko returned to his vigil. This time, however, his gaze was drawn across the square to the gold-domed towers of the Annunciation Cathedral, and he found himself wondering just what it was that the Americans had found there. It didn't take long for Sergeant Denisilov to get to the bottom of what the Americans had been looking for. He knew only one way of attacking a problem, and that was head-on. So he took the obvious route to achieve his objectives. He visited Petrescu's office, questioned him over what was said while the Americans were examining the Gospel of Gold, and then confiscated the surveillance video for the time in question. Returning to his office in the Kremlin, he examined the material in preparation for briefing Colonel Goshenko. 3 hours later, he stood before the colonel's desk once more, laying out what he had discovered.
Creed and her companion arrived mid-morning and remained inside the Annunciation Cathedral until well after lunch. They were escorted to the examination room by Dr. Petrescu, and the video footage shows that they never left the area until the doctor returned to escort them back outside. The only item they examined was the Gospel of Gold.
Besides mentioning the library, did they indicate how they expected the Gospel to help them find it?
No, sir. Except for the man's one reference to the library, there is nothing clear in the audio recordings. They must have known they were being recorded. According to Petrescu, the Americans were there to conduct research for a graduate thesis on illuminated manuscripts, but that is counter to the information he passed on to you about the library. Nor can I find any information that supports the Creed woman being enrolled in a graduate program anywhere. Even a call to the offices of that cable program she works for didn't turn up any information. The surveillance tapes show the two of them examining each page of the Gospel with great care for several hours. I've reviewed the tapes and pulled out a section I'd like you to take a look at.
The tech officer Denisilov had brought along cued the digital file, and a moment later the images of Miss Creed and her companion appeared on Goshenko's monitor. It showed the man's clear agitation and what appeared to be Creed's attempts to calm him down.
Right there.
Denisilov pointed to the screen where the two of them were standing close together, their bodies blocking the Gospel from sight.
Something happened. They found something. I'm not sure what, for as you can see, the view was obscured. But their attitudes immediately change and they become focused once more. I'm not sure what set them off, but I do know the end result.
Denisilov gestured to the tech officer. A still image from the video appeared on the screen. In it, Anya was showing something she'd written on a pad of paper to her companion.
Enhance that.
Denisilov had already anticipated the request. The four lines of text that formed a message spread themselves across the screen. It took the colonel even less time than it had Sergeant Denisilov to figure out the riddle. When he did, he snatched up the phone.
I want the security detail sent to St. Basil's immediately. They are to secure the building, especially the main chapel, and wait for my arrival. Understood?
Goshenko glanced at the clock on the wall, then back at Denisilov.
How long has it been since Creed left Petrescu's company?
3 hours.
More than long enough for Creed and her companion to find the key. Goshenko glanced again at the four lines on the monitor and then rose to his feet.
Time to pay the lady a visit, I think.
Ten minutes later, they were standing in the central chapel inside St. Basil's Cathedral, staring at the statue of the Virgin Mother. Its right hand was missing.
Go take a look.
Danislav had no qualms about climbing over the barrier. Pulling himself up onto the pedestal, he took a good long look at the stump at the end of the statue's wrist.
There is a set of grooves on either side of the wrist, almost as if the hand was designed to come on and off.
Goshenko opened his mouth to reply, but was interrupted by the arrival of the captain in charge of the guard detachment.
Colonel, you should take a look at this.
The guard led them outside and over to one of the trash cans in the square. He pointed inside the mouth of the barrel. Sitting on some discarded trash was a woman's hand. Goshenko reached in and pulled it out, which caused the captain to recoil. But the hand wasn't flesh and blood, it was stone. The stone hand of the Virgin Mother. The colonel looked at it for a moment and then held it up so Danislav could see the hollow center.
I want to know what was hidden inside here, Sergeant. I don't care what you have to do, just get me whatever it was.
Understood, sir.
The American and her companion are staying over at the Marriott on Tereskaya Street. I suggest you start there.
The map was everything they expected it to be. After leaving the cathedral, they returned to Anya's hotel room and carefully unfolded the piece of parchment, revealing crude line drawings and notes in black ink. It only took a moment for them both to realize that it was a quickly sketched copy of the original plans for the vault, no doubt drawn by Fioravanti. While most of the text was legible, a few areas had either faded or gotten smudged out when the map was folded. It specifically noted which of the many tunnels beneath the Kremlin the construction crew had used to access the lower levels, and gave directions from that point to the final location of the vault itself. Calling it the key to the treasure was like saying the Hope Diamond was a nice rock.
We did it!
Gianni scooped Anya up in a hug that lifted her off her feet. Anya hugged him right back, and in the process discovered a surprising set of muscles underneath his shirt. She found herself staring directly into his deep brown eyes. She pretended not to notice his knowing smile. Carefully, he set her back down on her own two feet.
We should tell Charles, don't you think?
Yes, definitely. We should get his advice on how to handle things from here on out as well.
Gianni dug out the satellite phone and they put a call in to their benefactor.
I'm terribly sorry, but I'm not available at this time. Please leave your name and telephone number, and I'll return your call as soon as I can.
It's Anya, Charles. We've had a development in our work. Could you please call us at your earliest convenience?
They spent some time going over the map, discussing key features and speculating on what the more cryptic notes might mean. Anya pulled out her camera and took several photos of the map, wanting to be able to use the computer's graphics program to enhance and enlarge the images. Maybe that would allow them to read the damaged notations a little easier. If Charles requested a copy, they would also be able to email it to him. Deciding that a congratulatory dinner was in order, particularly since they had managed to work right through lunch that afternoon, Gianni called down to make reservations at the restaurant in the open atrium on the fifth floor. Once Gianni had left to return to his room, Anya showered and dressed in clean clothes. In recognition of the occasion, she decided to forego her usual t-shirt and jeans in favor of a comfortable pair of pants and a silk button-down shirt. She brushed her hair out, leaving it down for a change. A glance in the mirror and she was ready to go. They obtained a document tube from the business center, rolled the map up and placed it inside, and then stopped at the front desk to have it put in the hotel safe. After that, they made their way to the restaurant and asked the maitre d' to seat them toward the back, away from the other diners. Dinner tasted wonderful, though whether that was because of the chef's skill, starvation, or the elation they were feeling, they couldn't say. Several times during the evening, Anya caught Gianni admiring her when he thought she wasn't looking, and she didn't mind the attention.
This might actually turn out to be an interesting trip.
That's when she noticed the four men entering the restaurant. They were all big men, and they stopped just inside the entrance and surveyed the open room. Their leader, a tall, well-built man with a goatee and a scar on the side of his face, had a few quiet words with the maitre d'. All four wore dark suits a little too small for their big frames, and as a result, Anya immediately noted the telltale bulge beneath each of their suit coats, revealing the presence of a weapon. An uneasy feeling in her gut, Anya had the urge to reach into the otherwear and draw her sword, wanting, no, needing, the protective feeling of having the weapon in hand.
That's not a positive sign.
She had a pretty good idea just who the men were looking for, but she needed to put it to the test before doing anything rash. Anya waited until the newcomers had begun to fan out through the diners before turning to Gianni.
Do you see that doorway behind you?
The one to the kitchen?
Yes. Get up and walk through it without looking back. Wait for me just inside the entrance. I'll catch up in a moment.
Why on earth would I want to do that? Dessert just arrived and I am enjoying myself, aren't you?
You don't want to spend the next 20 years in a Russian prison, do you?
Johnny glanced over her shoulder. His face blanched. He got up without another word, walked directly to the kitchen door, and disappeared through it. That caught the attention of one of the gunmen, which was exactly what Anya wanted. As he rushed right past Anya's table, the gunman never saw Anya's foot in his path. Anya rose smoothly. Now he was not only down, but out.
That woman! Get her!
A glance behind her revealed that one of the other gunmen was pointing her out to the other two, but they were on the far side of the restaurant. Anya burst through the door into the kitchen.
What do you mean, barging?
Gianni was standing a few feet farther in the room, his hands raised before him, facing a thin man in a chef's coat and hat who was brandishing a soup ladle in Gianni's face. Anya snatched a cast iron skillet off a nearby rack and rushed at the chef. The chef and his staff retreated behind one of the kitchen's long counters, letting the intruders make their way across the space unhindered. There was a door on the far side of the room. Anya led Gianni through it. They emerged into a hallway lined with guest rooms. Anya glanced in both directions, noting a pair of elevators to her left, the stairwell to her right, and the maid's cart in the middle of the hallway in between.
Come on!
Anya raced down the hallway toward the elevator, Gianni at her heels. As she passed the maid's cart, she noticed that two of the hotel rooms were open and in the process of being cleaned, but the maids themselves were nowhere in sight. They reached the elevator, and Anya slapped the call button. The doors to the left-hand elevator opened at once, as if it had been sitting there waiting for them. Gianni moved to step inside, but Anya stopped him.
No, we're not taking the elevator.
As he watched, she leaned in, stabbed the button for the first floor, and let the doors close on an empty elevator.
Get inside that room.
Anya pushed Gianni back the way they had come, her gaze on the door to the kitchen. They had seconds left at best. They stepped inside the room and eased the door shut behind them.
Where are they?
Look, you fool, the elevator lights. They're going down. Here, you come with me.
Where are they going?
Anya cracked open the door a little and peeked out. She turned in Gianni's direction and held a finger to her lips. When he nodded, she slowly eased the door open farther and looked out into the hallway. It was empty. She grabbed Gianni's hand and pulled him out with her, heading for the exit sign over a door in the middle of the corridor. Her plan was to take that down to the basement where they could hopefully find an alternate exit out of the hotel and avoid any further confrontation with their pursuers. It was a good plan. She just hadn't counted on the sudden appearance of the first gunman, the one she'd put down with a judiciously placed kick inside the restaurant. As he stumbled out of the door from the kitchen, Anya didn't think. She grabbed the maid's cart and rushed it down the corridor.
The stairs! Get to the stairs!
The gunman fumbled to get his gun out of his shoulder holster. The cart slammed into him, forcing him back through the doorway to the kitchen and off his feet. Anya turned and sprinted for the stairwell. She burst through the door to find an anxious Gianni waiting there for her.
Head down the stairs. Don't be afraid to make noise. I wanted to pay attention to you rather than me.
What are you going to be doing?
Hopefully making sure he doesn't follow us again. Now go!
Anya whirled around and ran up the stairs to the next landing and around the corner out of sight. She pressed her back against the wall. The gunman was forced to stand still for a moment and let the noise he made fade out. Anya couldn't let him follow Gianni. She vaulted over the railing and landed squarely on his back. Anya jumped clear. The gunman's head was bent at an impossible angle against the bottom step, his eyes staring sightlessly. His fingers twitched, then went still.
Damn.
Anya hadn't intended to kill him, it being awfully difficult to question a corpse, but there was nothing to be done about it now. Conscious that the others might have realized their mistake and already be looking for them, Anya didn't waste any time with regrets. She knelt beside the body and quickly searched it for some kind of credentials or identification, but she came up empty. Shaking her head in disgust at how quickly things had gone totally to hell, she headed down the stairs after Gianni. She found him waiting for her in front of a door that led to the first floor, and visible relief washed across him as she came into view. He moved to open the door, but she shook her head, pointing past him to the rest of the stairwell that led to the lower floors. They started down.
Some of our pursuers will be waiting for us in the lobby, or at least that's what I'd do. Leave one or two men to watch the lobby while the rest of them canvass other floors. If we do something unexpected, like bypassing the quick route to the street in favor of heading deeper into the hotel, it might throw them off and give us extra time to get away unobserved. I hope.
When they stepped out of the stairwell, they found themselves in a wide corridor in the heart of the hotel's service area. Several men in blue coveralls were pushing carts of dirty linens in one direction, while the next shift of maids were busy stocking their carts from an open supply closet. Anya and Gianni slipped out into the flow of traffic, following the men with the laundry carts, hoping to find an exit. Near the end of the hall was a set of double doors on the right, both of which were propped open, letting the occasional wave of steam out. Anya caught the heavy scent of detergent and bleach and steered Gianni in that direction, assuming that there would have to be some decent ventilation in the room to keep the workers from becoming overcome by the chemicals. The easiest way to do that was to have a door to the outside. They were almost to the door.
Stop!
Everyone, Anya and Gianni included, instinctively turned in that direction. It was the leader of the gunmen. He stood in the middle of the hallway, pointing a gun at them.
Run!
Staff scattered in every direction. Carts and laundry went flying as people fought to find cover. Gianni shot into the laundry room, Anya on his heels. Massive industrial washing machines lined one side of the room, dryers the other. Employees were staring curiously at the strangers in their midst.
Exit?
Several of the workers turned and pointed. An open door was half hidden behind several wrapped bundles of laundry.
Thanks!
They ran for the exit. Anya and Gianni burst out the door to find themselves in a dimly lit alley at the back of the hotel. Anya didn't hesitate. She just grabbed Gianni by the hand and took off down the alley at a dead run, dragging him along in her wake. She was praying that they'd reach the other end before their pursuers caught up with them, knowing that they'd be gunned down like ducks in a shooting gallery if they didn't. The alley opened up onto a side street that was just as dark and just as empty. Anya raced down that one until it bisected a slightly more trafficked area. Cars were parked up and down the road, but there were no people. With her hand still clamped over Gianni's, she led them across the street and then ducked down behind the nearest automobile.
Shh! Listen.
They weren't out of this yet. Anya glanced down the street. Traffic was moving on the next street, but it was a long way off. It would take them several minutes to get there, and even then there was no guarantee they would find cover. The buildings lining the street were either apartment buildings with thick iron gates, no doubt locked tight at this hour, or commercial properties with their doors hidden behind steel shutters and thick chains. Clearly, the cars lining the street were their best bet. Anya began to creep along beside the cars in a low squat, being sure to keep her head below window level and therefore out of sight of anyone coming down the street they'd just left behind. Gianni crept along behind her, casting nervous glances back over his shoulder every few seconds.
Now what?
Anya ignored him, intent on her search. She needed something nondescript, but also something with enough guts under the hood to get them away from their pursuers. She had her doubts about the Russian models. Fortunately, there was a black Mercedes sedan parked three cars up. She crept beside it and gently lifted the handle on the front passenger door. Locked.
What are you doing?
Getting us out of here.
Anya glanced up and down the street. Not seeing anyone, she rose to her feet, put her back to the driver's side door, and cocked her elbow. She reached in and unlocked the door.
Get in and keep your head down.
But...
No buts. Get in before we're out of time.
A bullet shattered the window of the car parked behind them. That was all the urging Gianni needed. He hauled open the back door and flung himself down on the back seat as Anya climbed into the front.
Wait, sir! Look! That car!
There they are! Get them!
She kicked savagely at the steering column until the portion covering the ignition wires cracked away.
Get us out of here!
Anya reached under the steering column. She yanked down the wires and quickly selected the ones she needed. The bullet slammed into the trunk of the car. Anya chanced a glance behind her and saw three men closing in on their position. A bullet plowed into the headrest of the passenger seat, only a few inches away from her face. Anya twisted the wires together in her hand. Woo! Anya threw the shift into drive and hit the accelerator.
We need to ditch the car.
Gianni was right. It had been an hour since their narrow escape from the hotel, and sooner or later, someone was sure to report the car as stolen, if it hadn't happened already. Frankly, Anya was surprised they'd attracted as little attention as they had. Apparently, the sight of a vehicle with two shattered windows and only a few less holes than a golf course wasn't all that unusual in Moscow. She'd been driving aimlessly for the past hour, trying to stay off the main thoroughfares and threading her way through the back streets, intentionally avoiding those nicer parts of the city that foreigners like them would be most expected to retreat to in times of trouble. Now she'd begun intentionally looking for a place where they could leave the Mercedes behind without getting mugged or killed in the process. She found it about 15 minutes later, a rundown neighborhood of tenement buildings and corner bars, but with enough foot traffic that they wouldn't be mugged the minute they abandoned the vehicle. Anya parked between a battered old Volvo and a panel truck that had seen better days. They left the doors unlocked and just walked away, knowing the car wouldn't be there by sunrise and feeling pretty happy about that. The chop shop thieves would tear it down to its component parts in a matter of hours, erasing any evidence of their theft in the process. They walked to the nearest bar and paid the bartender 600 rubles, or about 20 bucks American, to have him call them a cab. It was highway robbery, no doubt about it, but Anya couldn't afford to call attention to themselves by arguing or threatening the bartender with her sword, so she let it go. She thanked him for his generosity in making the call as she handed over the money. The whole time she was telling herself that karma was a boomerang and that the bartender was going to get his own, no doubt about it. The cabbie thought they were a couple of rich tourists out slumming, and he also tried to gouge them. This time, they were away from prying eyes, and Anya quickly disabused him of the notion with a few choice words and a highly effective nerve strike to the arm she had snatched up and was now holding over the back of the seat. For a moment, she thought she was going to have to snap the arm, which might give her satisfaction but wouldn't get them out of their current predicament. But then the cabbie gave in and took them to a nearby hotel without any more fuss. It was the kind of place that rented rooms by the hour and charged a deposit on the bed sheets, but Anya didn't care at this point. Everyone who came here was looking for some privacy, and those who stayed made an effort not to remember anything about anyone else they might see. Still, it was only when they were both safely behind the door of the single room they had rented for the night, clutching their sheets, that Anya began to breathe a little easier. Because they had been waiting for Sir Charles Davies to return their call, Gianni had been carrying the satellite phone with him at dinner. Thankfully, it had survived the subsequent chase and gun battle. They used it now to call their benefactor.
Anya, I hear you have good news for me.
It's amazing what a few hours can do to change one's fortunes, she thought, before taking the time to explain everything that had happened that afternoon and evening. It was not a brief conversation.
Where are you now?
A rundown hotel on the outskirts of town.
And the map?
Still locked in the safe at the Marriott, as far as I know.
Which means whoever is chasing you may or may not have it.
I'd guess the latter. It'll take them time to make the connection between our faces and the names of a couple of registered guests, so there might be time to recover it.
Ah, it's far too dangerous for you to even try. I'll see if I can have someone pick it up in proxy for you in the morning. In the meantime, lay low until you hear from me tomorrow. It's going to take some time to work out a way to get you to the American Embassy.
The embassy? Whatever for?
Well, to help get you out of the country, of course. You've got armed gunmen after you, Anya. Clearly the situation has gotten too dangerous. Why are you laughing?
I'm not backing down. Not a chance. I studied that map long enough that I can practically recreate it from memory. I'm sure I can. You figure out a way for us to get into those tunnels, and I'll find you that library.
Anya noticed Gianni looking at her oddly,
Please, hold on a second, Charles.
She covered the receiver with her hand.
What?
Have you gone mad?
Of course not.
Then why are you telling him that we're going after the library?
Because I am. I assumed you'd want to come with me. Was I wrong?
Very well.
Anya put the phone back to her ear.
So, what's our next step?
Well, I'm not sure yet. Stay in your hotel room for now. That will minimize your chances of being seen and recognized. I'll make some calls, see what I can figure out, and I'll get back to you as soon as I have something.
They said their goodbyes and hung up. It looked like it was going to be a long night for all of them. Anya spent the night in that cramped little hotel room lying beside Gianni on the narrow bed. The Italian slept like the dead, snoring quietly in her ear. But several times Anya awoke to voices in the hall. When she did, she'd lie there in nervous anticipation, ready to call her sword and use it if need be. But each time the voices faded as the speakers moved away down the hall. Anya was up with the dawn, pacing back and forth inside the small room, staring at the satellite phone and willing it to ring, despite the fact that it was the middle of the night in the U.S. She hated sitting around, waiting on someone else. She'd come to the conclusion that even if they were being chased by members of a government agency, which she believed they were, then those members were not acting in any kind of official capacity. That the gunmen she'd taken out hadn't had any official ID supported her theory. And they were not afraid to use force to get what they wanted. But what exactly did they want? That was the question she couldn't answer yet. She suspected it had to do with the map, and by extension the library, though she didn't understand how word had leaked out about it. Perhaps one of Charles's contacts had been loose-lipped? Of course, there was also the possibility that whoever was after them had nothing at all to do with the library, that it was Anya who was the target. Since taking up the sword, she'd foiled the plans of some dangerous people. They might have even been after Gianni. She barely knew him and had no idea what he might have been involved with in the past. It was a decidedly irritating situation. To help pass the time, Anya tried to recreate Fioravanti's map from memory. She found a phone book in the nightstand, even though there wasn't a phone in the room. She tore the cover off it and used the blank space on the inside to sketch out the map and as many of the notations as she could remember. It wasn't perfect, but it was close, and would at least get them within the general vicinity of the vault. Gianni finally woke up around 9, just as Anya was finishing the map. The guests on each floor shared a single communal bathroom, one without a shower, no less. The two of them took turns standing outside the door while the other had a quick sponge bath. Anya had dealt with worse conditions and didn't mind, but Gianni grumbled the entire time. Anya thought about giving him a piece of her mind, but decided to give him a break. After all, it was probably the first time he'd been chased by armed gunmen. By lunch, there was still no word from Charles Davies, and the cramped confines of the hotel room were wearing on them considerably. Anya was confident they hadn't been followed to the hotel last night, and given her belief that they weren't officially wanted by the police, she figured they were safe enough to slip out and grab a bite to eat, provided they didn't linger in the open. They managed to get the location of a cafe from the recalcitrant hotel clerk.